No? Yes, Griffith versus Edmonds School District.
Oh, 5 minutes, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Michael Blue on behalf of the appellant, plaintiff Bertha Griffith. This is a relatively classic case involving two buses that collided. The facts are disputed from A to Z. What we have here is the plaintiff on a bus parked at the side of the road, another bus coming in the other direction, somehow may or may not have come into contact with the bus that Ms. Griffith was on. Nonetheless, it's undisputed that Ms. Griffith fell and was injured.
So your position basically is a statement, an accident report, I must have tapped the DART bus mirror with mine, is sufficient evidence of a collision to create an issue of fact?
I think the issue of material fact has been raised by the fact that the bus driver of the Edmonds bus admits that she was not, that she was straddling the lanes in her while she was attempting to corral three rowdy boys on the bus.
Straddling the lanes, if there had been no contact, wouldn't proximately cause your client's injury, would it?
Well, I don't necessarily believe that contact is the issue. What is the issue is that the bus that the Edmonds school bus driver was driving was in the wrong place at the time it came within.
Don't you need contact to have something to account for the jolt that caused your client to fall?
The testimony is agreed, and it's not disputed, that there was rocking of the bus anyway. So the fact that whether it was contact or not.
Do you know why it rocked?
I don't think we do, Your Honor. I think we have to know
that. What if you just had a jittery bus driver who was doing this as he drove down the road? There's another bus straddling the center line, but that's not why he's jittery on the wheel and there's no contact. Do you still have a case?
I do believe so, Your Honor. I believe that if the bus driver is down the road driving, you know, in a fashion such as that he's jostling the passengers, as long as those passengers are standing, he shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, but you're not suing that bus driver. You're suing the other bus driver.
We're suing the bus driver that was in a place where he shouldn't have been, where she shouldn't have been at the time that the plaintiff was injured. It wasn't the fact that there was contact or not. That's not the issue. The fact of the matter is that the Edmonds
school bus driver. Tell me what your causation theory is if there's no contact.
That the bus was rocked. That
okay,
and somehow, assuming the fact that.
What's your causation for rocking the bus if there's no contact?
Well, Your Honor, your answer is proving my point. And that is that there is a genuine issue of material fact as to whether there was contact or not. We have the bus driver
stating. See, I have a
stating,
serious disagreement with you.
And
that's
that?
Why I asked you my first question, if whether that was sufficient evidence to create an issue of fact as to contact. Because if there is no contact, how do you establish that the conduct of the one bus driver who's straddling the center line caused the second bus to rock?
I don't think we have to go there. I think the fact
don't
that
you need something to cause rocking for there to be a proximate cause of your client's injuries?
We have that. We have the passage of the other bus, whether it contacted or not, caused the rocking, which everyone agrees occurred. There's
what
no dispute. The duty is
the duty.
The duty
not to rock another vehicle.
No, the duty is to maintain with.
I'm in trouble.
The duty, Your Honor, is to maintain your lane and not be driving while at the same time trying to discipline three rowdy kids in the back.
That's a duty, but that doesn't encompass not rocking. What you've got is you haven't, none of this lines up with regard. You haven't got a nexus for the injury.
Absolutely I do, Your Honor. I have a bus that's driving out of its lane, coming into contact. It would be our position,
and the purpose
a genuine issue of material fact as to that.
Lane is what? So as not to strike other vehicles.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Nothing in there about not rocking them. That has to do with size, air movement, and a number of things as between the two vehicles. Several laws of physics,
mm-hmm.
none of which are inherent in the motor vehicle.
Here's where you're getting yourself in trouble. You should be arguing that there's a question of fact about contact, because your other theory here is not making a lot of sense to us. So do you agree that you have an issue of fact about contact?
Absolutely, Ryan. I never conceded that we didn't have contact, that we did not have contact. In fact, I was just assuming that, for purposes of argument, that we didn't have contact, that we only had this.
Why would you do that?
Because I think that there's still an issue. I want to make it harder for myself.
Well, you're doing that.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not conceding that there wasn't contact. Indeed, there was an admission that there was contact, at least with the mirror, by virtue of the fact that the accident report, Ms. Wilson, the driver of the Edmonds school bus, stated.
Now, is that accident report admissible into evidence?
It's an admission, Your Honor. She testified to it both in her deposition.
About some kinds of accident reports by statute not being admissible.
Well, in this case, it was endorsed and discussed in her deposition testimony, and she had
all right.
Admitted it. So, thank you, Ron.
Good morning, Your Honors. Emma Gillespie from Prague O'Donnell for Edmonds School District. Absolutely right that there are facts in this case. Those facts are not disputed in this case, and those facts do not support evidence of any contact between these two vehicles. The only evidence that...
Well, you've got evidence, and maybe the only evidence, but there's evidence. And then there's the rocking of one of the vehicles, which a person could, I suppose, make a reasonable inference, given the evidence that one struck the other. That it was caused by the Edmonds school bus, well, that all goes to a jury. You've got evidence that there was an impact.
The evidence
isn't just movement of air, but that would be, I'd be interested in the testimony on that if you ever went to trial, because I think with the right physicist, I could certainly prove that that's one of the consequences of not being in your lane in a narrow circumstance with a big vehicle.
At that point, I think, and that does touch on a point that I want to make during oral argument today, is that if that is a theory, that requires expert testimony.
Well,
we don't have any expert testimony.
That's not
okay,
theory.
Let me get you. Why isn't I must have tapped the DART bus mirror with mine enough to create an issue of fact?
Exactly. So the court needs to take that evidence as a whole. You have to look at the reasonable inferences from the evidence. And the reasonable inference is borne out by Ms. Wilson's testimony, which is to say, she testifies very clearly, I did not think that I hit the bus. I looked for evidence that there was a collision. There's no evidence of the collision. And her writing that down is speculation. She's saying, I have a bus driver who tells me that my bus caused his bus to rock. I am speculating, I'm trying to come up with some reason that that might have happened. That speculation should not be held against the driver,
That's an explanation for why she said these words, but isn't that something a jury's entitled to sort out, because she did say the words, I must have tapped the bus mirror with mine?
I mean,
what you're telling us is why she said it, but is a jury required to accept her after-the-fact explanation for why she made a statement, or alternatively, could it surmise, well, this is something she's now saying after she's been sued and after her employer has hired lawyers and the lawyers have talked to her.
But inherent in the statement, I must have.
That goes to weight. As soon as you go to weight, guess what? You've got a jury. Prior or fact.
We do not have, though. It is not evidence that... It is not evidence that there was contact, and it is very clear from her testimony, it's very clear from Mr. Hurley's testimony, it is clear from the photographs that we have in this case. Those photographs speak volumes. There is no evidence of contact.
Are you asking us to weigh the evidence?
I'm not asking you to weigh the evidence. I'm asking you to take the reasonable inferences from that evidence, and there's no dispute.
Are you suggesting that one could not reasonably infer that this statement means contact occurred. There may be other reasonable inferences, but we're supposed to take the one that is most favorable to the plaintiff when we're drawing an inference from this testimony.
And I understand that, Your Honor. However, that is exactly the argument that I'm making today, is that no reasonable person could conclude that there was contact between these two buses, and that is insufficient to satisfy plaintiff's burden to get past summary judgment.
And so if we disagree with you, that's the end of this case.
I disagree with that conclusion.
I really like you disagree with us. That's why we're here, and we reasonable right. people can disagree. But if we find this is something from which a jury could infer contact, then this case goes to trial.
That assumes that that this document gets into trial, and I do think that.
Well, I asked some questions about that, and that's not a basis for which I understand the trial court ruled that this was inadmissible. There are some kinds of accident reports, as I alluded to in my other question of opposing counsel, that aren't admissible in evidence by statute. And I don't know whether this is one of those or not, because that isn't in the record before us.
That's true. It has not been argued at the trial court.
There wasn't a motion to strike this statement on the basis the statute precludes him from offering it to the court.
I did not file a motion to strike it. You're correct, Your Honor.
So we get to consider this statement for purposes of the case in front of us.
Certainly. However, as I was stating before, I don't think that that statement is sufficient in light of the deposition testimony of Ms. Wilson to defeat a summary judgment.
I think that horse has left the barn.
Sure. And what I'm saying is, even with the admission of that document, summary judgment at the trial court level was still appropriate given the totality of the evidence in this case. We do not have any. The statement that she makes is, I must have tapped this mirror. That is speculative. That is not evidence of contact. We have photographs. We have the only statement that we have that is certain that there must have been contact is from Ms. Griffith herself, who has provided at least three different iterations of how this incident occurred and how she was injured.
There's a big difference between handicapping what's going to happen at trial and deciding whether somebody's going to get a trial. This may be a case plaintiff can't possibly win at trial.
I would love for you to explain that to plaintiff's counsel.
Well, I think it's the difference between the federal court summary judgment standard and the Washington state court summary judgment standard. I mean, we would be asking different questions if you were in federal court.
That may be true, Your Honor, but even with the state court standard, I still believe that this is a case that was appropriate for summary judgment in light of the evidence that is available that shows that there was no contact. Once again, I go back to our photographs. I go back to our deposition testimony from Mr. Hurley, our only independent third party, whose boss came out and looked. We don't have a police report. Ms. Wilson was not required to have a urinalysis. She was allowed to finish her route, which is, if there had been any contact at all, that never happens. That absolutely does not happen. It is not according to protocol. And we have all of this very solid evidence, and the only thing that has been pointed to by plaintiff's counsel, aside from the testimony of Ms. Griffith, which is all over the place, we have one statement that says, I must have tapped. And that is a result of a procedural effort on the part of the district. Anytime there is a stop, there is an attempt to write these statements. And we are relying on the statement of a bus driver who may not be savvy. She's just trying to explain what may have happened. That should not be held against either her or the district on that issue. She should be allowed to explain herself. And in her deposition testimony, she has been very clear that she never thought that there was contact and that she was simply speculating as to why her bus may have made the other bus move. If there are no further questions, I'll go ahead and conclude and request that that you guys affirm the trial court's ruling.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Your Honor, as you correctly pointed out, in order to to grant summary judgment in this case, the trial court had to do three things. That is to assess the credibility of the witnesses that were presented on behalf of the moving party. The court had to weigh the evidence, and the court had to draw inferences from all the facts that they were presented. And those three things are what the juries are all about, and that's what the juries are supposed to do. The court overstepped their bounds in granting summary judgment motion in this case. It's a unique case, in fact, because of this contact argument. But I submit that what the defense is trying to do in this case is to create a new standard for motor vehicle accidents. As this court knows, there's plenty of cases that come up here with no property damage whatsoever, and people are assessing or alleging that they've been injured. Are we going to create a rule that requires us to have contract to show property damage in order to be able to present a claim? I don't think that's the rule. I think the rule has to do with what the defense did, whether the adverse driver had done. And here it's clear. She admits to trying to restrain three rowdy kids in the back. She, at least in her mind, thought she had contact with the mirror. She stopped. Both drivers got out. The police came to the scene. Both supervisors came to assess it.
What was her testimony as to her reason for stopping?
She thought she had contact. She stopped.
That's what she said? That was the reason?
Absolutely. The only reason she didn't have any other reason to stop. There wasn't going to let any of the kids out. Or she stopped because she thought she had contact. That in and of itself, that credibility issue raises an issue with respect to the credibility of her now testimony that says, well, I didn't know if I did or not. The fact of the matter is that she did stop. The fact of the matter is both parties talked about it. Supervisors came. Police were called. Ultimately, nothing occurred. No reports were made. No assessments of liability were handed out. Nobody got a ticket. But in their mind, there was a question. There's the contact issue. I don't think we have to go there. Maybe I'm the minority. Maybe I shouldn't even be advancing that argument. But I do believe that why the bus rocked, which everyone agrees on, is really the issue here. And the reason why the bus rocked, the only reason could have been because the other vehicle was in a place where it shouldn't have been at the time, and the accident. I mean, then that rocking caused my client to fall. It's also not contested that she was hurt. Whether she fell because of the accident or stability or because she was a liar on a loan application, all irrelevant. The fact of the matter is that the testimony, the admission, the contested issue here is.
What's the evidence that the bus was someplace it shouldn't have been at the time? Is it unlawful to travel the roadway?
Well, it's unlawful to drive in the middle of the road, yeah. It straddled the lines.
Which line?
The center line.
So it's on the wrong side of the road when this happened?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
And that was admitted by Ms. Wilson, the driver. If there's no other questions, I'll... Thank you, Your Honor.
I missed that. Thank you.